So very good day to all the listeners out there. And today we have our friend David Tian.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm David Tian. I'm glad to be back here again.
Yeah, I mean, the last time you were here, it was, I think, live stream, right? We're talking about the state election.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
You were in Kedah and things like that. So we invited David here today because we want to, I mean, after weeks of talking about American politics and last week talked about Sarawak, we want to get back to the national scene and just talk about all the different things. I mean, pre-recording, we had so many interesting discussion, right? And now, of course, I was just saying, you know, what are the recent news? What are the recent trend? But maybe let me just begin with something happened a couple of weeks ago. And it's not a new development, but the Kelantan Sharia court, the whole case that went to federal court and then by 8-1 decision.
Yes.
So basically, it's not a major law development because the court was just upholding the normal convention, which is basically, Sharia law cannot exceed what the federal constitution has limited, which is basically you can't fine someone more than 5,000 ringgit and you can't send someone to prison for more than 3 years. Now, of course, it created a whole hoo-ha and people say you are disrespecting Islam and things like that. But if you want to go back a little bit further, because this was an issue that became hot during Pakatan Rakyat time when PAS was part of the coalition. And now I want you to begin by maybe giving us your view and comments, because this has always been an issue that is very sensitive to non-Muslim, right? Because they felt like, hey, you know, is our right going to be infringed? And in fact, one of the state or federal election in Sarawak, I can't remember. You know, I think it's SUPP who put out the advertisement and say, well, if you allow Pakatan Rakyat to win, then they will implement Sharia and you won't be able to eat pork anymore. So maybe begin by, you know, what you feel are the sentiments of maybe the Chinese base, because I think you have quite an interest in Chinese media also.
Yeah.
So what do you think is your position? But I mean, I'm just a bit curious because seems like not a lot of reaction this time.
It's very interesting that not a lot of Chinese voters, they become silence voters somehow.
They don't want to say anything, or they felt like just you know, it's a not a big issue. Or
I think last time, back to the Pakatan Rakyat era, although PAS is with PKR, with DAP, the SUPP, the other side will be hoo-ha, like, okay, if you vote for DAP, equal to you a vote for PAS, and a vote for you cannot eat pork, these kind of things. But back to the Nick Yiling cases, Nick Yiling versus Kelantan government.
Yep.
Before I came here, I actually listened to a podcast by Kate Price and Nick Yiling. Actually, Nick Yiling herself mentioned that actually the criminal law of the offences with the Sharia law, actually the criminal law of under our constitution law is more serious than Sharia law. Because Sharia law only limited to 3 years jail and
5,000.
Yeah, 5,000 ringgit. But some of the offences, if you duck what by the criminal law, actually they can go up to 20 years jail and more than 10,000 ringgit. So back to the branding and identity politics, just want to mention that how come this time no more in Chinese community, less hoo-ha out there. I think because of last time they might feel like, oh, this is a very urgent, this is very serious kind of things happening in our country. And now maybe I think there's two possibilities. One is they might think, okay, Malaysia is like that, lor. Cannot change already, lor. Another thing is they just become silent. They know it might be very serious, but they just don't know where to voice out their thoughts. But back to the Sharia law versus constitution law, I think it's there are huge misunderstanding in this case.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we will encourage everyone. I mean, the reasoning of the federal court decision is actually quite simple to understand. They're saying, look, we're just going back to the law. and follow it. We don't want to have two kind of criminal system. But of course, to go back to why this happened during Pakatan Rakyat's time, remember PAS was part of Pakatan Rakyat coalition,
yeah,
and they were opposition.
Mm-hmm.
So really at that time, it was Barisan Nasional trying to say, we will entertain PAS, kind of want to destabilize the whole coalition.
Yeah.
You know, should we do it? Should we not do it? Should we do do it? But the other issue that we have been saying really at the end of the day is religious behavior, right? You know, we talk about, yeah, you have Sharia law, and basically Sharia law is something that is applicable to those practicing Muslim. The thing is, if you conform or not conform to your religion, should that be a criminal behavior? Now, I know people will argue, well, my religion says so, but then again, if we come back to, if we are truly a multicultural nation, then you need a rule of law that is fair to everyone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So those days, I remember the Bar Council came out and say, well, let's say we have, you know, three, a gang of robber, a Malay, Indian, and Chinese, all decided to rob someone, kill someone, rape someone. And then all of a sudden, the Malay guy, if there is a separate Sharia law, they will be charged under the Sharia law, and the penalty could be higher or lower.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the victim will not be getting the right justice. You see that they're coming from natural justice point of view.
Mm.
Then of course, talk about the inconsistency. You know, at the end of the day, let's say you appeal to all the court, but in the end, you still need to have the highest court deciding, right?
Yeah.
You can't have two highest court,
yeah,
like a Sharia highest court and civil highest court, and so interesting that you mentioned the other day that Prime Minister said we are not a secular country, right? Now we discuss about what secular means, but why do you think Prime Minister says that? You know, in what context is he talking about we are not secular?
I think we have to look use the Malay community kind of perspective.
So their psyche, their understanding. Yeah.
For I think in Malay, this is my view. I think in Malay communities, the phrase like secularism, liberalism,
they're all the same.
Is all haram kind of things.
Okay.
But if we back to the philosophy kind of discussion, actually, it's not that haram or it's not that serious. Liberalism is like back to the root. Actually, now of the constitution is the supreme law of the sovereign nation. It's come back to the root of liberalism. We say French Revolution or the independence movement of American, etc. You name it. So there's an argument from PAS and Bersatu is that you know Hadi Awang come out with a statement that the law or the peguam have some remaining seat of the colonialism. He tried to frame the decision of the our court, our Supreme Court, to the colonialism.
Yeah.
So to link all the things together. So it's very very strict kind of strategies. If we use the perspective of political strategy, it's like I blame you. You are the enemies of someone, and I'm the good one. It's very black and white, but actually politics is not black and white at all. But if we we don't need to look into deeply into this case. Actually, we want to study more a little bit. It's really not against some religion or races. It's just we want to safeguard our constitution law. That's it. And back to the you mentioned the.
You're talking about the secular one, no?
Ah, yes, the secular one. Okay. I think Anwar mentioned the secular.
Oh, yeah, we are not a secular nation. Remark.
To answer the Malay community, Malay voters.
So it's like a targeted statement. I mean, to be fair, I think Prime Minister has been, I mean, for lack of better expression, he has been like having two ton like that, two fork.
Yeah.
Like this is a message for the Malay base. This is the message for my Pakatan Harapan base.
True.
And So it's like, on one hand, so we continue to pander to nationalistic right. Yeah, but on the other hand, we need to develop economy, use Bahasa Malaysia, but then need to improve English also. But this kind of thing, I mean, I can understand politically where he's coming from. But at some point, people don't want this kind of double talk anymore, right?
Yeah, they are, especially some of the people that are bilingual, trilingual, they know Malay, English, and Chinese. They know what you are talking about. So I think some of the, especially the Klang Valley's voters, actually, if there is a better choice, they might not choosing Pakatan Harapan anymore. Just now, our opposition is not doing so well.
Yeah, because they feel like everything, you know, when we think about Pakatan Harapan 2014, they have the 2014 and then 2018 they had the Buku Jingga, supposed reform, and then it's all happening. Then of course the other day Bersih had a very, very tiny rally. And that's the other thing, you know. Are people kind of giving up on reform? You know, when they say Bersih, it used to attract a lot of people. Yeah. I think the other day the report said less than 100. Of course it's very ad hoc and things like that. Even the whole organization has changed. Now, of course, Prime Minister did see them and he said he will be a group. But you know, he is the typical discussion, not going to commit to concrete stuff. And it's more like, we'll see what happened. But before we go there, we'll go into that in a while. on the whole Sharia case, you know, we're saying that, you know, you were saying that maybe people don't care and they become silent voter, but we won't have any substantial or significant election for the next couple of years, right? I mean, the next big one will be Sarawak state election.
Sabah first, and then
Sarawak. And a lot of this national Islam issue not going to be a factor in those places. But it is Zaid Ibrahim who came out and say, look, we are not a theocracy. And he said that very clearly. And in fact, I was just doing some referencing, even as early as 2014, I can't remember already. He already said, look, we don't have a, you know, as a top lawyer in the country, he said, we do not have dual legal system. We don't have Sharia and civil, don't confuse. We have Sharia because certain religious behavior, you all want to govern yourself. But that is not a criminal system per se. And so most of the Sharia application, more on, you know, more in terms of if they want to leave their faith, you know, they need a Sharia court to approve a Muslim wedding, you know, division of property, custody of children. I mean, if you agree to marry under Islamic law, then property and children and relationship should be dealt there. I think we had no issue with that because that's your private affair. But in terms of national interest, national security, criminal, you know, Zaid Ibrahim basically said we don't have a dual system because it will be anarchy, you know, in terms of there's no consistency there. So if you want to be like, it doesn't matter, you know, Prime Minister is just trying to, you know, assure the people, I mean, assure the more conservative one. And which is interesting that you mentioned secular, liberal, haram, they all kind of lump it together, right? But we were just saying, right, in our view, secular, we are really talking about civil law. We are really talking about our common law system, our constitution, which is the highest law. You know, we're not talking about the Western liberal kind of thing, wokeness, which we all don't want. We will object them even more than the conservative. But that seems to be the way it is played in the media. And when people look at the Kelantan decision, they felt like, I mean, people like Hadi Awan tried to frame it as an attack on Islam. And I think, you know, the linking you mentioned to colonial is pretty successful, right?
It's kind of, it's working now in the, unfortunately, maybe our Malay communities. But it's interesting that you look at the underlying, we say underlying political attack and oppose and defend kind of game. It's really, you need to think about at the end, what as a people, as a voters, what have you gained by this kind of political attack and offense and defense? It's really your feeling Are you feel offended by this kind of decision? Actually, what Nick Ealing cases actually just proclaim that, okay, this is Malaysia again. It didn't change much. That's it. Maybe because they feel offenses because of that law are passed by the Dewan Undangan Negeri of Kelantan.
Yep.
So that's it. They feel, okay, why you are attacking our religion? But actually, my view is like, it's really not a big deal. It's really like, okay, this is what Malaysia like. And most of the Malay actually agree with that. Why only this case you suddenly you get emotional? You mentioned some, maybe the religion or races being the Ugut, the Ancham. Yeah. Why? Is it really that easy to Ugut and Ancham? I don't think so.
And that's why I was just checking. I think this is this is quite recent. This is 12th of February 2024. I think it's like Ibrahim. And he was just talking about, because the comment coming out, actually, of course, this is, this is from Kelantan government. This is supposed to be, you know, the past alliance kind of thing, or the green wave. You know, you say green wave is over already. But it's from there. But then I think when Zaid came out and he was like, when UMNO say you also want that, he was very astonished. You know, he's like, why do you want that? Because this is the very thing that caused you to lose power in federal election. And so I think one of the things he mentioned about this is, look, the Sharia is really for personal religion kind of thing. It's like, is your faith so weak that you need this kind of organization? I mean, when you keep on saying that you need more and more religious law, you're basically saying that your faith is very weak. I mean, it's like, this is what he said, you know, we were just quoting him. Yeah, but anyway, I think enough on the Kelantan one. And I mean, it's like, I don't know, you know, maybe in days to come, there'll be more discussions. And you can see in Sarawak, for example, people want to talk about this kind of religious freedom, right? Okay, let's talk about, now, of course, I think we're focusing, now we have a new Argon, and more than 1 year since general election, no significant election coming out. So basically, there is very little reason for Prime Minister to be very defensive anymore in terms of his agenda, right? I mean, that means, because in the past, you can say, oh, if he pushed reform too much, maybe the Perpaduan will fall apart. UMNO won't like it. You know, things like that. But now, really, very little reason, right? So let's talk about the reform and going forward, right? I mean, how maybe you can just give us your general view, you know, what you are seeing, and maybe what you are seeing and what you are hoping the next couple of years will bring.
For the first thing, I think is the economy. We have to have some increase or some progress in our economic performance, because if we look at our competitive level, because last few days ago when ringgit really shrink to the lowest point after the 1998 Asian economic crisis, some World Bank, I think World Bank is alarming Malaysia. It's like, oh, because of the ringgit downfall, and actually, it's proven that Malaysian competitiveness is shrinking as well. We have to really look into it, because some other reports say that Malaysia competitive level is up. So which source is true? Which source is really like just to show confidence to the peoples? We don't know. But we can see that more and more young people now choose to work in Singapore. Some being scammed to Myanmar, to Cambodia. It's a very sad story, but if we foresee 10 years after, if our ringgit is still low, and our youngsters are still going out to the country, migrants as well, where is our new human resource? Where is our new batch of talents? We call it a phrase, a brain drain. I think all of the national leaders, they know, they all know the issues, they know all the problems, but maybe this is a consequences of the, to be fair, maybe it's a political unstable past decades, and also more, most of the, we are more focusing on political gaming instead of really rebuilding our nations. So if now our prime minister have the majority support by the MPs, we so-called the stable politic, he have to show himself.
He has to perform.
He have to perform. He have to prove, or else next year, next term, he might be replaced by other people.
Yeah, because you know, for the 15, 16 months, kind of don't want to take, of course they announce budget to fix here and there. Mm. They you know, they say cut subsidy with PADU. Now, of course, PADU is another topic. It's like, okay, we'll talk about PADU in a while, right? And then the whole thing is, now the Agong can come out and say, you know, I'm not going to entertain change of government so easily. Now, of course, from a constitutional point of law point of view, it's not a very right thing to say.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, if someone can cause the parliament, the prime minister to lose the confidence of the parliament, then government can be changed. This is the law, you know. Yeah, you shouldn't say that it cannot change. But I can understand where he's trying to come in from. He's trying to create some kind of political stability and to say, look, Anwar, you should be free to do what you want to do for the next 2 years. Then people will judge you for the better or for the worse. Yeah. So would you agree that, like, he in the next, I mean, I say 2 years, but even in the next 1 year, if he doesn't perform, heads will be rolling from his own government?
It could be. It could happen. To be fair, actually, I know this year, the New Year speech, he really highlighted this year goal is economy. He's strengthened three times. So we can see the policy is ongoing. And with the subsidy thingy, and all the things, the thing is not that whether he is doing the changes. I think the government is doing the changes. Yes, they are, the subsidy things and the SST. And we might be, this year might be not be a easy year for all the Malaysians, but we have to go through it. That's it. But the point is, what if after 1 year of this kind of uncertainties in economy, the ringgits and the subsidy, and the outcome is not good as we expect?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at many nations facing economic crisis, you look at Argentina, you look at parts of Europe, we have Japan and United Kingdom going into recession, and Australia not doing well. So it's like a worldwide kind of thing. But when your fundamentals are weak for a long time, and we can talk about, you know, seeing Sheraton, then COVID overspending. You know, they were just saying that when they look at the number of ringgit being printed the last 10 years, you know, like all nations print money, but Malaysia apparently is one of the top printers. Okay. So that means this big, I mean, of course we have, I mean, economists have all their theory about, you know, supply and demand. But one of the factors for inflation is really when you print more money.
Yeah.
Because let's say today we have, like, you know, 100 billion paper in circulation. Imagine in 10 years time you have 200 billion. Basically, whatever you have, 1 ringgit now becomes 50 cents in 10 years time. So this kind of thing cannot be easily rectified. David, I totally agree with you that we're in for a hard time. Of course, today, 1st of March, 8% SST, you know, a lot of people are scrambling with that account. I think Prime Minister was saying, I don't care if you're a big company or small company, inland revenue, you can do rate if you want if they don't comply. You know, he was saying something like that, which I think causes the business community to be a bit unhappy, you know. Now, here's the other thing. Of course, you want to increase revenue, and they're very, very aggressive that you see all the government organization are collecting money, companies, commission, RRB. But on the other hand, you have people who have the theory that, look, you want the economy to grow, you have to be business friendly.
Yeah.
But somehow in Malaysia, I mean, asking your view now, do you think when you hear the word business friendly in Malaysian context, does that mean more corruption, more fast track, you know, I give you some favor, like GLC at that, you know. That's how people understand business friendly. But of course, you look at like US like that, when they say business friendly, they are really talking about less rules, easier way of doing business, less compliance. Less compliance in the sense that you want to encourage business, and only when they reach a certain amount, like for example in Australia, you don't need audit unless you are like a 10 or 20 million revenue company. Malaysia, you still need to audit even if you are more than, now I think it's 2 or 3 million. Oh. So a lot of compliance, but of course they are trying to deregulate. But what do you think? I mean, from what I see, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of business-friendly policy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of saving policy. Yeah. Cut costs. But I haven't seen a lot of business-friendly from our administration so far. What do you think?
There's a saying that if you want the economy to do well, you have to spend more.
Mm.
In Chinese, we say it's not you jie liu, it's your kai yuan. You cannot jie liu, you cannot save so much because your economy is dead.
You spend to develop.
You spend whatever, just you make all the economy cycle running. But I'm not pro in economy, but I really feel like maybe this the government, what government's doing is more, it's like we cannot have another experimental testing.
Okay.
They just have to do whatever they can. And now, some of the SME, some of the big company have money, take it. But is it causing a bad economy or business surrounding? I guess so, maybe. So there's a saying that we are attracting FDI because of the China-USA conflicts and blah, blah, blah. But we really cannot hope for the foreign thing, international politics so much.
Yep.
We cannot rely on that. Okay, maybe in the 1990s, the whole global economy doing well and we do well. But now seems like we are not doing well. International politics and the economy is not doing well as well. So back to your questions, that what is my view? I always believe this kind of theory is that we cannot fix on one theory. We cannot fix, like we just tax the rich, all the rich, and all the rich can go to Singapore. It doesn't work like that. But we also cannot let all the business tycoons become real tycoons. In Chinese with guo tou, it's not good as well, because all the tycoons, they, if they are rich like that, they actually have power, and it's not good because all the tauke, if they can easily affect the policy, and you really become a false state. So Malaysia actually is not in a good situation. So Arnoy is really, he must deliver in this kind of situation. So I think compared with the past prime minister, to be fair, Arnoy is not doing that bad so far, but yet to, we only can judge his performance maybe after 10 years. After
That's what some of the politicians were saying. Look, the general election is for 5 years, so please judge us after that. I think fair enough. But of course, people have day-to-day concerns. And to be fair, I think regardless of who is prime minister, we are probably facing the same economic constraint and issue. Now, of course, now you were just mentioning that recently more and more political podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Especially since Keluar Sekejap. And so I did hear a bit of Menteri Bakar by Rafizi, and so he kind of, it's very long podcast, and I mean you all can go and listen if you're interested. But Rafizi did make an interesting point, and basically he's coming from the ways, that's why I say subsidy, for example, is waste, because it's not targeted enough. So rich people also get subsidy. So that's why the whole PADU thing came out, which is a separate hoo-ha. And so he's just saying that, look, we don't have enough money to spend, so we have to stop the bleeding. I think that's a good concept, but whether people can believe you are helping the people or not, I think the perception that most people have with the government is you're just in for yourself and things like that. So I guess it would be for the government to prove that they can really reduce the spending, because if you can reduce the spending, you will have more funds to help other people. Like recently, the health minister just announced they used to have a Madani health insurance, right? Then he said it's being discontinued because it has been used up 75 or 76%, used up already, okay. No more money. And I don't know if you realize this, the last couple of weeks, a lot of private health insurance increased their price, some even by 20%.
Wow.
And they say it's a global adjustment. There's no way around it. I mean, what you will get SMS and things. I mean, some is not much. So if you buy a 500 ringgit per month or 300 ringgit per month, then increase 20, 30 ringgit. But back to the whole thing, you know, a lot of theory also, right? You know, should we have GST and things like that, all this kind of thing. But I want to kind of pivot to another point, because since we are talking about reform, people are focusing, I mean, the government rightfully is focusing on economy. Do you think because of that focus, maybe some of the structural reform, you know, talk about independent AG, talk about all these things, is taking a back seat because of the focus on economy?
Relate to the independence AG.
I mean, this is one example.
Yeah, because of the same meeting with Anwar. Anwar promised.
Yeah, he promised. That's why
By year end, it will be table, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But if you want the some amendment of Pidan of Ata be table, you have to go through cabinet first. So if you want to by year end, you have to table right now.
Yeah.
This quarter or second quarter, that's it. Or else, so much amendment and laws being this need to be dibentangkan di parliament.
Do you think it's taking a back seat? I mean, I think, well, it's important, but maybe not so important because we have to deal with the economy. I mean, do you feel there is that kind of vibe out there?
I think it could happen like that. It could happen because he can say that, oh, we have to focus on
and economy. It's convenient for Prime Minister because I just felt like he. Now, of course, all these things require constitutional amendment. Not easy.
True.
He just doesn't feel like he wants to go back and negotiate with everyone. Because to do that, you have to go and talk to UMNO, you have to talk to GRS, GPS, and everyone will be like, okay, Prime Minister, you want us to do that? What can you do for us?
Yeah, true.
So this is one of the reality of Papaduan, right? And I just felt like he might be a bit relieved that, okay, I should focus on economy, so... but of course, like you say, he did meet with Bursa representative and promise. That is one of the things he did say that he's kind of agreeable to put in a candidate. And I think when you think about even Papaduan now, right, it will not be so hard for him to put in a candidate which can pass parliament and still be favorable to the government. I don't think it's that hard.
True.
I mean, you look at Speaker. They can get a reasonable... compliance speaker, like I'm not saying at least or whatever are compliant, but I'm just saying that they will at least be loyal. They're not going to be, because independent AG basically it is what it is. You don't need to be loyal to the government.
True.
But speaker you have to, you know, in a way. So I don't know. He might be just want to buy a bit more time.
It could be, because if you appoint a so-called independence AG and suddenly you're being charged, and oh, you're Papaduan, big head being charged is not a good sign for, we use a phrase, kestabilan politics.
I mean, we I think one episode we talk about Zahid DNA, right? And so, of course, a lot of people say the court, but it's not the court, you know, a lot of people misunderstood DNA is the persecutor, the AG decided to drop.
Yeah.
It's within their right, but it's a perception issue we talk about. And when you want to form a government, I mean, look at what's happened in Thailand. Thaksin Singh is out. It's a deal, you know. It's a deal for... I mean, when you think about his party combining with the army, it's like a deal with the devil, but he made a deal nevertheless. So, but anyway... Now, let's talk a little bit about Padu, right? Because now, I just got an SMS today again. I think yesterday or today, and they're asking me to register Padu now. I can't be really... Okay, let me just read to you. Daftar dan kemas kini maklumat di sistem padu sebelum 31st of March.
Okay.
Pastikan maklumat lengkap dan tepat.
Lengkap dan tepat.
I think this is a... Oh my goodness. This is like the fourth SMS I got already to register padu. So I haven't been bothered. I mean, partially because I don't think I'm going to get any rebate. So why bother, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, if you know you won't get rebate 100%,
yeah.
That's why the thing with padu now, maybe David, you can enlighten us a bit because I'm still not very sure how it works. I mean, they only say we want to collect information and then we'll see how to distribute, right?
Yeah,
they don't have a criteria, right?
I think so. I didn't heard or get any information about.
Because we always say, look, let's say your combined household is X amount. And X amount might be very comfortable in Sarawak and you might be very, very poor in Klang Valley.
True.
So I'm just wondering, is there any kind of... Because, for example, we all use car and things like that. So even, you know, they say, oh, we're going to eliminate the T20, you know, M40 kind of thing. But even if your salary is a bit high, you can still... these people also pay tax, right? Surely they are entitled to some rebate, right?
True.
And I just feel like if government is saying that, look, regardless of your income level, you can get some rebate. Then I think everyone will register. Just less rebate, lah. But now it's like, it seems like people with higher income just get no benefit. You look at the water increase, look at the electric increase. I was just checking the other day because
the water.
My house electricity usage is pretty high. So so I reached a level where my domestic, the rate is higher than Sarawak commercial rate.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, commercial rate usually is double, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you imagine the higher bracket residential in West Malaysia is higher than Sarawak. Okay. Now, of course, it's different company.
Sarawak is different cases.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have more energy and things like that. But you know what I'm trying to say, you know? You're not giving enough incentive for everyone to participate.
Mm.
If you say, look, I don't care your income level, you can still get something.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I think I might not... mind registering for padu, but if I know, for example, I'm not going to get anything because of certain income level, then I can't be bothered. You know, in fact, I know a lot of people can't be bothered, even if they may get it. They're in that middle range. Maybe they can get it. Maybe they won't. They can't be bothered because they are not confident that government can ensure privacy. You know, I found out one thing that the government. Other department cannot just go to the Inland Revenue and say, I want your information because of Data Protection Act. They can get certain things. If they want to do investigation, if you don't pay tax, you don't pay back your student loan, you cannot travel. Immigration can use the data to stop you, for example. But other than that, it's quite, unless it's provided under Income Tax Act,
okay,
they can't just take the information.
Mm.
So that is the reason. But somebody was saying, is it you or another person? They were saying they register and towards the end, they wanted some information. Or then you just leave it empty and it's still done.
Almost felt
like it's a KPI kind of thing.
I think... to
so you have submitted, right?
I have registered, but I yet to submit my information because to be fair... I think I have the same concern with SU because why I need to give government my private information? That's it. Okay. And the second thing is I found out most of the so-called middle class people, they really don't bother to get a rebate from government because that kind of...
they feel cash, they won't get it.
First is they feel they won't get it. Second is the amount is not that big to risk your information. That's it. So, but just now, point out a very interesting point. If like, if you make the rich people to have the passionate to register these kind of things, it will change whole narrative, whole registration of padu.
Because I was just thinking, you know, the other day I was just thinking, you know, what will really cost people to register? You know what? It will be if petrol is $4.50 tomorrow. You know, just increase the price first, and then say, look, everyone will get something.
If you register padu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you're the highest bracket, you still get something. Maybe you only get 1% or 2%. But people are like, they just want some rebate. You know, I don't know. I think...
Feel good for a while.
If you take the subsidy away immediately, but of course, Of course, you cannot be so irresponsible because if you do that, certain businesses can really die. You know? If you're in transportation, immediately GDEX or whatever say, okay, our local courier, you buy from Lazada, it's $4.99, now it's $10.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I understand why they cannot do that. Petroleum subsidy is a huge thing. If you take away I think by most estimation, is double the price or even more.
These are actually, we are subsidizing the half of the price. Mm. I think some of the content creators from foreign countries, they come to Malaysia, it's like, can you believe that the drinking waters in Malaysia the oil and gas is cheaper than the drinking water. Actually, yes.
Oh.
The drinking water, let's say 1.5 liter is 2 ringgit.
Mm.
And you just compare.
I never thought of it that way.
It's really cheaper than mineral water. Oh, boy, I guess one of the cheapest price in the whole world. But Malaysia is just used to it. And actually, we do all our budgeting by our income. And suddenly, we have to have more budget for our oil and gas. And we are so reliant on our private transportation instead of public transport. By the way, public transport is another topic. But
yeah,
it's just all the bad cycle linked together. Mm. And we face today's crisis.
Yeah, talk about public transport. Like the other day, just my area, because we joined a local community social media group, and somebody was saying, 11 a.m., go to the shop area, like go through 3 or 4 rounds, cannot find a single parking. Then, of course, you always get comment. People say, oh, should improve the public transport. But it's not so easy to improve the public transport.
Exactly.
You can put in billions of ringgit, you won't get anything usable for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So it is. So I think people driving, like recently, because you have to work further away, you also get a car, right?
Yeah.
So we can't get away from that cycle. Mm. And it's just, what's the thing I wanted to say already? Suddenly I can't remember, but why I mentioned
public
this.
Transport.
Yeah, public transport and...
with the subsidy kind of things.
Subsidy, like, yeah. Actually, I wanted to talk about, okay, maybe I talk about something else and then we come back. And sure. It's like, we talk about efficiency, right? Mm. And of course, another big news recently is the tourism minister. Yeah, right? It's like, actually, I don't think I ever remember any minister fire their director general. I can't think of
DG,
in news.
Yeah. Mm.
It's really serious, you know, because DG is like, the chief civil servant.
Mm.
Yeah, basically the Pangara of the whole ministry is very, very senior position.
Good point, and
to kind of go, I mean, I can understand he was a bit defensive and angry. But of course, I mean, the minister has the power and maybe the way he do it, not correct. But we go back to the whole discussion on, because the whole thing quickly turned into racism, right? It's like people say it's a racist kind of thing.
I'm no youth chief.
Yeah. But it's the efficiency kind of. I mean, when we talk about civil service in Malaysia, I mean, you are in civil service.
Yeah.
I mean, if people say civil service is not very efficient, I don't think you are that offended, right?
Actually, it depends. Mm. Some of the professional is really professional.
Mm. I mean, they are good. I mean, they're good, bad apple. But in general, if people say our civil service is not up to mark, I think you can't really defend it, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what one of the thing, I mean, this is the thing about status quo, because, you know, we talk about so many problems already, but to change, like you say, you have to bite the bullet and pay the price.
True.
So to do that, like if efficiency is not good, you replace, you know, like company. You hire someone to be manager, sales manager, you know, I have 6 month KPI, 6 month cannot reach. I either demote you, I reduce your salary, or I change you.
True.
This is a marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it seems like in government, we don't have that, but it seems like tourism minister wants to do that now. I don't know, he's just making an example, but it's going to cause unhappiness all around, right? We always say, civil service in Malaysia is a sacred cow, cannot be removed. But it has, I mean, you have been hearing a lot of people saying, right, I mean, the expenses,
it's
just huge.
Huge.
You know, my father always say, because of the pensions, his generation, you know, they all have pension. Those days before his generation, a lot of people, once they retire, they die very quickly. But his generation, a lot of them survive. So he's saying that because they don't die, the government keep paying.
Oh, okay.
So that's why the whole, I think Prime Minister also talked about that, right?
Yeah, I think Prime Minister did mention that in a very bold way, because past Prime Minister won't do that at all.
So those are clues of maybe some of the reform that he wanted to do, you know?
I think this is some of the clues, because just now you mentioned whether Anwar will be performing this year. So the cutting, the considering of cutting the pension actually is a very bold move. We should give the credit to Anwar as long as he really doing that. But what we might need to ask ourselves, that what is the next step? We cut the pension, then can we use the money well? Invest in well placed?
I mean, you save first, then how you use is another matter. And of course, he target the politician first, because many of them have two or three or four pension. So that's a bit, a lot of people feel it's a bit excessive, right?
Some people even feel offensive. It's like, oh, you are a state assemblyman. What, of 1, 2, 3 state? Okay, you have 4, and you are an MP. You are a minister, so you have 6 pension actually. If you want to do good, really save the country, you choose one lah. So Anwar did say that, mentioned that publicly, that I want Aziza, only choose one. What about we change? Really change this?
And he is correct to say that, look, like for example, State Ardun, the pension is because of the state assembly law, you know, so it's not something Prime Minister can change.
True.
So he is correct in saying that you need, all level needs to change. But this is one of the example to say wastage. Now I want to finish off by one final topic, another huge topic, but it's just kind of like talk in passing and then we'll be over already. Otherwise we'll be exceeding our time. Now, in recently, of course, we have ex-Prime Minister Najib, high-level persecution, right? But then now you start to see other high-level persecution. Tun Daim, for example. Then you look at Mahathir's son being asked to declare assets. Muhyiddin is being charged. Ex-Prime Minister Sabri's aide is being investigated. I find it quite interesting that the government is quite bold to go after high-level political target, because it's like, if you do that, are you not afraid when you lose power, they will come back to you? So what do you think of all this high-level persecution? Because we are talking about the last two prime ministers. It's almost a bit like South Korean kind of style, right? I mean, it's like Muhyiddin is being charged and his acquittal just overturned a couple of days ago. Sabri, of course, not personally charged, but his aide, they say suddenly a few million found into his account. So maybe the evidence is there, we don't know. But what do you think of this development? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
The pattern of the South Koreans there, but actually it's not healthy, I guess. It's just maybe we use a broader view to view of Malaysian political progress. Actually, we just step into a time that everyone can be charged. But just how do we maintain a healthy kind of political surrounding? Is the habit just whether I came to power and I can charge you, or you came to power? It's just kind of revenge kind of style.
Yeah,
it's not healthy at all. But
I agree with you.
Let's say I am in the prime minister's post to look into this kind of stuff. First, I need to secure my post so that I can do all the things. I can revive our economy, blah, blah, blah. And another thing is, I think there's a possibility that this kind of tycoons being charged, maybe because they really have so much money that can contribute to our nations. I don't know. There's a view, but also that maybe just they want to show the people that actually we are against corruption. Actually, we have not compromised in corruption and etc. A political branding is maybe it's a effective branding, but for our nation building kind of things, just all the tycoons will be afraid if not my bros in the come into position? What if my enemies come into position?
Mm.
And where do I put my money? Foreign countries? Offshore?
Yeah, I never thought of that before because, you know, in the previous episode, you know, Lyra and I, we always discuss about, you know, if there's a new regime, there should be a proper cut off line. You know, you shouldn't go back. I mean, even Trump didn't go against Hillary, you know, for his email non-compliance and things like that. And that's like mature politics. But I was just hearing somebody saying that, you know, why go after Dime? Why go after Mahathir Sam? Why go after Sabri? Why go after Muhyiddin? Because remember a while ago, there was the Dubai move. And, you know, it's like still try to destabilize. So it's almost like that. I don't want to say prime minister. I'll say the administration is issue a warning that if you continue to destabilize us, we have ways to deal with you.
But
of course, you are correct to say that if that happens, I mean, it's like, even Prime Minister himself used to be part of the old administration. You know, where do you cut off? You know, there's no friends or enemies forever in politics. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, for people who are not in the center, you know, just a tycoon and things like that, yeah, maybe once upon a time they helped Muhyiddin. Maybe once upon a time they helped Mahathir. Or they helped give donation to UMNO or whatever. Are they now? It's like, I should be very, very careful. You know, you think about, you know, we just talk about with Tai Mahmud's passing, you know, Abanjo. You know, will be from a political point of view, he will be glad he could consolidate already because there's no
one. It's a new generation.
Yeah. But then you think about it, he was in Tai Mahmud's administration for 20, 30 years.
True.
So it's like, where do you do the cut off? You want to charge Tai Mahmud, I think you have to charge the whole GPS. You know what I mean? It's like, now, of course, GPS is untouchable because of their value to Papaduan.
Mm-hmm.
So people with no value, like Dime like that, can be charged. Yeah, I mean, I can see the pros of it, but it just doesn't give a very good natural justice feel to the whole thing. It feels like kind of vindicated. But I think when you look at the I don't know, I mean, in Malaysia, we don't really have good polling system and things like that. But seems like a lot of people don't mind Dime, Mahathir, they're all being charged. I mean, that's the general impression I get. They don't really seem like a lot of people say, oh, it's injustice and things like that. Most people are like, oh, yeah, go after it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did you get that kind of view?
For my personal view, I really, it's like, okay, another S politician get in charge. But for my point of view, it's really Malaysia get from a more totalitarian system going to more... everyone can become prime minister era. So it's a lot of politicking out there. It's really, we've been through a real politics era that everyone need to negotiate with everyone and you won't be winners forever. So you have to cut your enemy as soon as possible. That's it. So if you cut them right now, good for you.
From that point of view, I can understand because that's a bit like decentralization already, and we're just saying that maybe in the near future general election we won't get a party who can win 65 seats by themselves.
This made me really think about the Indonesian politics because we look at Indonesia 30 years ago, the Sukarno or Suharto,
more centralized than us,
much more centralized than us. The Goka is kind of untouchable,
more untouchable than Barisan.
What is Goka? And now you can see Jokowi, new rising democratic stars, and now he also he also make his sons get into powers.
Yeah, he's creating his new dynasty, right?
Yeah, dynasty. It's like it's really, the system is there. It's not easy to change. I think most of the ASEAN country right now in these 30 years go through the totalitarian system and the totalitarian corrupted, and the new system come. It's really whether we can go through the process that we can build a more healthier, I won't say a perfect system, but it's a more healthier or more slightly better than our past generation. I won't expect we have a perfect or most democratic or most wonderful utopian kind of system, because corruption is not in every politician, it's in I think just this DNA of human beings that yeah. if we come into power, we want to have a little bit more, little bit more power and money. This is why the founding fathers of Americans mentioned that if we have to have a check and balance system because human is not angels. We make mistakes. I think we're just struggling the process of human making mistakes and we insult. And again, we make mistakes. we realize again and we pay the price and we bear the consequences. But somehow these consequences need to bear by whole generation of people. And most of them they're very innocent. That's it. This is the reality of the world.
Yeah, David, your last comment just kind of made me think of the next podcast we can have. Because, I mean, we talk about a lot of things and it's at the end of the day, politics is not perfect. And, you know, to have a well-run and fair nation, you still need the right people. But then we can always kind of dream and say, you know, what kind of value we want. And so maybe the next episode, let's, you know, when Lyra comes back, let's do one and we just kind of say, you know, what are maybe the core points that we want and maybe what are the things nice to have, but if you don't have, it's not, you know, it's not absolute necessary because then I think it will really cause us to think what kind of nation we want to be. Yes, it's not perfect. There will be compromises. Maybe for some people, they just want economic comfort, but for other people, they want check and balance so that whoever is there, more corrupt, less corrupt, the system will keep them in check. Yeah. That kind of thing. So yeah, maybe we can come and just kind of share our personal desire. I guess it's a desire, right? It's a desire and passion. And yeah, maybe that for the future episode, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Sure.
All right, David, I think it's been very, very interesting to talk. I mean, we didn't even say what we want to do, but we kind of go different places.
Yeah.
So really glad for you to be with us here and we hope you can come back again.
Sure, I'm more than happy to get back here.
Yeah, so that's all we have for today. Okay, bye-bye, and we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.